Joe Kuhai Audio Podcast, A Wishbook Christmas, Take One.
If there's one thing during the Christmas season that really, really makes me wince, it's when somebody comes up to me and says, "Wow, Christmas is just not the same like it used to be." That is the most obvious thing to say, isn't it? Christmas isn't like it used to be. Of course it isn't. That's the way life is. Life continually moves forward, continually morphs. So no, our Christmas today is not the same as it was a few years ago even. You know, life just changes, continually moves forward. You know, our traditions change, our interests change, our technology changes. So yeah, it's different than it was. And for those of you listening, both of you, who happen to be of my age, you know, the late baby boomers, the golden age of Christmas for us was the 60s and early 70s. And now I'm not saying that it was better than yours or yours or yours. I'm just saying it was just a great time to grow up as a kid and celebrate Christmas. And a lot of things began during that time that are still enjoyed today during the Christmas holiday season. There's a lot of television shows, a lot of toys, a lot of games that are still around that were created during the 60s and early 70s. So like I say, for us, it was a golden age of growing up and Christmas for us baby boomers, us late baby boomers. Now, 50 years ago, when us kids were growing up back during that time, the 60s, early 70s, like I said, there was two things that united us all. And I don't care where you lived in the country, these two things brought us all together, made us one at Christmas time. And the first was television. Oh yes, television. It was a big thing during the 60s, and it was probably because we didn't have 4,000 channels like we do today, you know, 4,000 channels and nothing on, like Bruce Springsteen says. You know, we just had a limited number of channels, and I don't care where you lived in the country, it was the same. Someplace you might only have two channels, maybe three. I was fortunate, because I grew up in the New York City tri-state area. So we had seven channels all together. You know, we had the three flagship stations of the big three, ABC, NBC, CBS, had three independent channels and one PBS channel. So that's seven channels in all. So that gave us a little variety, but not much. We still had that limitation. And that limitation caused all of us, all across the country, to watch the same shows. You know, today we have so much diversity out there. You could stream anything you want any time of the day, you know, any day of the week. But then you only had one shot to watch a show because there were no reruns. You would have to wait until the next year to see a television show again. So when Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the Rankin and Bass production, you know, that stop-motion animation production, first came out, when it first premiered in 1964, if you didn't watch it, boy, you were shunned on the playground the next day. You know, because we would go, you know, outside to play during lunch at school, and, you know, everybody would watch TV the night before and then go out to the playground, and it would be just like going to an office and hanging out at the water cooler. We'd go out to the playground, and we'd say, "Oh, man, did you see Rudolph last night? Wasn't that amazing? Or did you see the Grinch last night? Boy, that is some neat cartoon, isn't it?" And if you missed it, oh, you were shunned. You were an outcast. You were not hip. And you'd have to wait until the next year to see what they were talking about because there were no reruns. So that limitation of channels during the Christmas season brought us all together from New York to California and every place in between. All of us kids would watch the same show because that's all we had. You know, we couldn't go flipping around. And I mentioned Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer just a moment ago, that Rankin and Bass production that came out in 1964. Boy, that was a big deal when they came out. I remember all the gang, they all watched it. It was just an amazing show, that stop-action animation of theirs. It was just so smooth and so flowing. It had a gripping story of acceptance. And right in the middle of it, and it looked like it was part of the show, all of a sudden down a hillside came the Norelco Santa Claus. It was a commercial, but it was stop-motion animation, too. So it blended right in with the show. And you couldn't tell the difference. You would think all of a sudden, well, great, here comes Santa, and he's sliding down the hill on a triple-head Norelco razor. It was part of the show. We didn't know. No, but there was a lot of great shows that first premiered back then in the 60s for the Christmas holidays. A lot of those you can't see anymore, like the Mr. Magoo Christmas Carol. That one's a hard one to find. Do you remember Mr. Magoo? He was blind. He was a cartoon character, and he was blind, and he could get into all kinds of predicaments because he couldn't see. You know, he thinks he's walking down the street when he's actually walking on a girder on a building like 10,000 stories up. You know, that's the kind of guy he was. But he did a version of the Christmas Carol, and Mr. Magoo was narrated by Thurston Howell III, better known as Jim Backus. Oh, Magoo. Oh, yeah. And what else that premiered? Oh, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. That's another Rankin Bass production, and it was voiced by Fred Astaire. Now, I know a lot of you won't believe this, but it's true. I'm telling you, it's the truth. Our holiday television watching wouldn't begin until Thanksgiving Day in the afternoon, and there was only one reason for that: the Macy's department store. I'm not kidding. You know, it wasn't Santa Claus or the calendar that controlled when Christmas was coming. It was Macy's. It was Macy's and their Thanksgiving Day parade. Before that parade, you wouldn't see any sign of Christmas coming. There were no decorations, no commercials, no Santa Clauses in stores or on street corners. Nothing. There was no indication Christmas was coming. But once the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade rolled and Santa Claus was in that last float, it was like Macy's flipped a giant switch and told the world, "You may now go Christmas shopping." And everything all of a sudden just jumped to life. Christmas lights and Santa Claus all over the place. It was an amazing thing. And that's when we would begin watching all the holiday TV shows. And that was just part of what united all of us kids at Christmas time back about 50 years ago. The other thing was an amazing book that came from another department store. And it's a shame this store had to file bankruptcy and they're going out of business, because they produced a catalog every year that became a true holiday tradition. And like I said, once we saw this catalog hit the kitchen table, we knew it was Christmas time. Game on. Time to get that letter to Santa written, because it's coming, and it's coming quick. And that book was the Sears Christmas Wish Book. Oh, boy, have you ever seen one of these books? Oh, my goodness, it's about 4 inches thick, it's 600-plus pages of black and white and color photographs, and all of us kids all over the country waited for that book to come in. Oh, man, when that book arrived, we'd grab it off the kitchen table, spread out on the living room floor on our bellies, and start going page by page, scouring every single page of the Sears Christmas Wish Book. And you had to, because it was so full of stuff, you never knew where they were going to just pop something in that you'd want to see. And I'm not kidding. Right there in the middle of the ladies' girdles, there would be a telescope ad. So you had to go page by page. One year, they actually put Dennis the Menace cartoons in there. So you'd have to go page by page looking for each panel of the Dennis the Menace cartoon. Oh, it was marketing genius is what it was. You know, so we'd go through these pages and, you know, we'd always start at the very beginning, and they always started with pajamas. Everybody I knew always got a pair of pajamas for Christmas. So this again, is pure marketing genius. The first thing you start off with in the Sears Wish Book is pajamas, right? Robes, slippers, you know, things like that. And then you move on to the next section, which is, you know, wallets and girdles, all kinds of things. Women's lingerie, which we just kind of sped right through real quick. We were just little kids. We didn't know. And we speed right through that. And then there was a whole section of holiday treats, you know. You could get tins of cookies, popcorn, candy, hard candy, ribbon candy. You could get fake whiskey with a label on it that says Old Grand Gag. You know, all kinds of things. And the one Sears Christmas Wish Book that really stood out for me, the one that I remember to this day, is the 1968 Wish Book. And I remember clearly that there was a section where you could buy old world style crafts for your home and for your families. It's true. And, I mean, they had all these old-fashioned-looking, antique-looking things. They had hand-carved wooden items, like hand-carved ashtrays and hand-carved globes of the earth, even hand-carved hands. They also had 5-inch-wide, 5-foot-long stainless steel swords that looked like King Arthur's Excalibur you could buy. Old world, you know, stuff that really make the neighbors talk when they walk into your home. And the one thing that really stands out about that yearbook was the full-page ad it had that began with a story. It said, way back when, back in medieval times, the smithies would bang out these beautiful suits of armor for the knights of the kings and queens of Europe. And then those knights would take those suits of armor and wear them to vanquish the royalty's enemies, or maybe save a damsel in distress. Oh, chivalrous, wasn't it? Very gallant, these knights in shining armor. Well, the ad goes on to say, if you could find these suits of armor today, it would cost you $100,000. Well, my first thought, of course, is it's going to cost you a lot more than $100,000 if you could find a suit of armor just laying around somewhere, you know? But the ad went on from there. It said, and right now, you can own your own suit of armor. That's right. The fine craftsmen at Toledo Steel have crafted a 72-inch suit of armor that can be yours. Your friends will marvel at it as they walk into your home and into the front room to see this suit of armor standing there. And it can be yours for only $1,600. Boy, I wanted that. And finally, you would get to the toys. Oh, and my mom would always tell me, do not write in the book. Flip the corner down if you want something on that page. And by this time, when we got to the toys, it would become ragged. All the corners would be turned down. And it would always start with some really lame things. There was a thing called the Fun Box. And apparently the company that put the Fun Box together had a lot of toys left over from the year before that kids wouldn't buy. They would not play with. So they threw them into this Fun Box, and for $4 you could get things like Parcheesi, Chinese checkers, dominoes, jacks, all in one box. Who wants that? Come on. Sears had a great one, similar to that. It was the Super Box, and that's all it was. It was a box. Seriously, for $4.99, you could buy a box for your kids. It might have a picture of a train painted on the side or a spaceship, but otherwise it was just a box, and it could be yours for $4.99. How much did a PlayStation cost you this year, buddy? Then you move on to things like a ventriloquist dummies. There's a career choice right there. You know, you could get a Charlie McCarthy or a Jerry Mahoney ventriloquist doll and throw your voice. They had bicycles, of course. Every kid wanted a bicycle at Christmas time, and Sears had a big selection of those in the book. They also had unicycles. Now, I couldn't even ice skate, but I wanted a unicycle. But I know a lot of kids who got bikes. Did you get one? And did you live up in a snowy, icy area of the country during Christmas? You know, you want to ride that bike, so you take it out there on the icy sidewalk, trying to ride your brand new bike. They didn't make snow change for bicycles back then. And then the book would continue on. And now they're dividing up the toys into two sections, boys and girls. And it would always start with the girls section. And it was very stereotypical. You know, it had baby dolls, homemaking items like stoves and ironing boards, things like that. And I have to tell you, all the girls that I knew growing up, Denise, Donna, Martha, Gianna, all of them, they never wanted any of that. They'd rather have a telescope or a microscope, you know, or maybe even a rock tumbler. And I saw one of those the other day, and I could never understand that. You know, you put the rocks in, they tumble around, they get real shiny, maybe you can make jewelry out of them. I always thought a dryer would do the same thing. I didn't do that, really. I didn't do that. Well, maybe a little. Okay, but kids, don't do that at home. Do not put the rocks in the dryer. Bad thing. Mystery Date came out at that time as well. You know, all you girls from back then remember Mystery Date. You know, will your date be a dream or a dud? Oh, boy. And when I saw that commercial, I vowed to myself I would never be a dud. I don't think I made it. I don't think so. Oh, but a lot of other great games came out at that time that are still played today. You know, Barrel of Monkeys and Twister, you know, where you and your friends get tied up in knots trying to put your hands and feet on circles of different colors and things like that. And that became really a fun game when you became teenagers. You know what I'm talking about. Don't go there. And a lot of other great games came out. Battling Tops. Do you remember that? You had these tops on strings, and you'd each get into a corner of this plastic ring and pull your top and let it go spinning, and all four of them with names like Hurricane Hank and Dizzy Dan would go out, and they just clash into each other, just keep bouncing off of each other, and the last one in the ring was the winner. Oh, yeah, lots of fun. Battleship, Rock'em Sock'em Robots was a great one. You can find those games now, but there's a lot of toys that you can't find anymore. They all became dangerous and on the child safety recall list. Yeah, and most of those were found in the boys section. Now, it's true, like the Whammo Air Blaster. And I never thought of this as a dangerous toy, but apparently this was extremely dangerous. It looked like a hairdryer. It had a trigger on it like a gun, but it looked like a hairdryer, and it had a lever on top. And when you cock that lever, you pull it up and pull it back down, and then pull the trigger, it would let out a big burst of air. You know, it was just a big burst of air. That's all there was to it. But apparently what kids were doing was they would cock the gun and put the gun up to their friend's ear. And that big blast of air would blow out their eardrums. Oh, kids, you know, what are you going to do? Oh, and I had one called the Robot Commander. Now, Robot Commander was this remote-controlled robot. It was on this cable, and it had a little box on it that you would steer him. But what it would do is it would fling marbles, hard marbles, at anything. Boy, and you could break lamps, windows, you know, put welts on your sister. Yes, I didn't do that. Anyway, that was recalled, too. You know, dangerous toy. And probably one of the most dangerous that came out in the 60s, and it's been re-released now. They've brought it back, but it's not dangerous anymore, so what good is it? It's not fun. It's called the Thingmaker. And there was two versions of the Thingmaker that you could get. One, you could make plastic toy soldiers with. The other was called the Creepy Crawler. And most everybody remembers the Creepy Crawlers, you know? That was the best one. You could make your own rubber spiders and snakes and worms and things like that. And what it was this hot plate. It was just a bare hot plate. I'm not kidding you. And what you would do is you would take this aluminum plate. It's about a 1-inch thick aluminum plate that had these imprints, had these molds of all the different bugs you can make, those spiders and snakes and all that kind of stuff. And you would take this stuff called plastic goop, and you would pour it into the mold, put it on top of this bare metal hot plate, plug it into the wall, and within minutes, you would have a brand new toy, a rubber spider. You know? Now, the instructions said that you're supposed to completely cool the plate before you remove it from the Thingmaker. But who's got time for that? We're kids. You know, we got a busy schedule. We got a new toy here. Don't mind the third-degree burns. That's how it was. Oh, the Thingmaker. Great stuff. You know, I don't think my family ever really bought anything from the Sears Christmas Wish Book for me as a kid. I don't think Santa went shopping there for me as a kid either, because I don't remember getting anything that I wanted out of that book. But boy, it was an important part of all of our lives, all of us kids across the country during the Christmas holiday. So, all I gotta say is, here's to you, Christmas Wish Book. May you rest in peace. Merry Christmas, everybody. We'll be right back.